Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Gentleman's Talk. I hope you're okay on this fine evening. It is for me anyway, at the moment, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. Interesting one. I had to jump on today. I've been absolutely bollocksed all day. I'm not going to lie to you. This cold thing has just absolutely taken hold of me. Anyway, I've just had an interesting conversation, so it spurred me on to jump straight on and talk, because it was an interesting podcast, the last podcast I did. Working and, functioning with PTSD, it's an interesting scenario, and I got some feedback. I think I was in such a weird place yesterday that, in actual fact, I didn't realise how much this, I always forget how much I'm consumed by, say, the weekend. We're reflecting back to the weekend, and it's a heavy weekend, but it was very emotional, a lot of anxiety, a lot of, drinking, a lot of happiness, excitement, tiredness. There was a mixture of things that would, bat out in a normal day, let alone somebody who deals with their own mental health problems. But I got two variants back, really, from my podcast. And one of them was an interesting one, which actually sparked me to literally get up and connect the microphone and get talking, because it was an interesting one. So he listened to it, this friend of mine listened to it, and I love the feedback that they get, and I guarantee that I get good feedback, which is what I want. I'm being honest, so I'd like the honesty to come back. And it was interesting, the way that the message was delivered to me, because it was a voice message, because it's a little bit more personal. I don't really like texting. When you talk as well, you really get a sense of that person's emotion. You can tell when I do a podcast and I'm tired. You can tell when I'm on a high of life. You can tell the difference in your tone, the difference in how you deliver things. So those voice messages, they mean a lot. And so you can tell someone's real pressure when they send a voice message to you. And so he sent me a message saying, "Oh mate, listen to your podcast." He said, "Mate, I want to give you some honest feedback," and you could hear the hesitancy in his voice. And I was like, "Oh, here we go." And then he kind of went fully defensive towards, the main. If you reflect back to my last podcast, I mentioned how I was quite. Initially, my friend phoned me up and sort of spoke to me. But again, I probably didn't emphasize on the delivery of the phone call, which probably didn't give it much context. And, we've spoken, me and my friend Kieran, we spoke about this before. And he realized and recognized how shit that it went last time. So when he spoke to me on the telephone call and he said to me, I said to him, how was the audit, mate? How'd you get on? Because I was invested. I wanted him to pass the audit, and I was really invested in that place and making sure that he's coming on and they were able to achieve it. It's a big thing for me as a teacher and somebody who's been committed to that trade for 21 years to know that the baton, so to speak, has been passed on and they've held on to it. And they did. So they were invested, and then I didn't really give you context of the conversation, and the context of the conversation was more about, he kind of said to me, "Oh, you'll never guess what," and I went, "Oh, go on, mate, what's that?" He said, "Well, you never guess, I've had a chat with Doug, and, we're in the office, and you'll never guess what he asked me." And now I knew what he was going to ask him, because I already knew that the other colleague had quit, and, I knew that that would have been the question, and I went, "No, you didn't, did you?" And he went, "What?" And he went, I said, "No, you didn't. He didn't and you didn't." And he went. And then, of course, then the excitement for him took over. Well, no, he was like, "Yeah, he did." And then he went into the explanation side of things. And I was happy with that. And then that's when the protective side kicked in. And it wasn't really, like I say, it was no malice involved in it. But I was a bit like, I was deep in thought when I explained my podcast yesterday. That was my thoughts. That wasn't what I delivered, because I'm not an arsehole. So I wouldn't have delivered it in that context. I'm giving you the honest feedback to what was in my head, what I was thinking, how I was thinking it, why I was mad at this. There was a lot of explanation into that. But I didn't deliver that. That's what I mean. I said to him, you know, and if you speak to him, he will openly tell you that that was a, I was like, it was almost 10 seconds of the conversation going, oh, for fuck's sake, why are they doing this? Pissed off at the way they were doing it, and then worried about him not getting training. And then he put it to bed and went, no, I'm just going to do this, this, and this, get as much experience as I can so I can move closer to home and then hopefully work alongside you again. So that was where the conversation, I didn't kind of emphasize that bit because I wanted to really give you an insight into my brain and how it thinks. So he didn't kind of, so he sort of said that, and that was how it was left. And then obviously I texted him once I'd realized that that initial start of the conversation was quite difficult for me. And I sort of explained, and then I took it even further and jumped on the podcast. And on yesterday was about how I function, and it's difficult. And it brings me straight back on that, even with like knowing that now you've had a quick refresher on the story, that my friend, you know, when he sent me the voice message and even put "don't hate me," I was like, I don't hate anybody, mate. I'm not. The honest feedback gives me the opportunity to explain it in further detail. And also brings me on to another topic, hence the reason why I'm jumping on with a little bit of extra. And even though, you know, Billy's known me for, you know, just over a year, and we've had good conversations, and like I said, we've done a live on this together. So we kind of know each other a little bit, you know, we've had a drink together, we've been shooting together. So he knows that element of me and knows I'm not an arsehole, but was still shocked. And it was interesting because even though he knows I'm not an arsehole, and I'm a completely different person nowadays than what I used to be, put it that way. And that was the interesting bit. And this is what gave me, spurred me on to jump onto the podcast actually and go, now I need you to 110% see that last podcast was my raw emotion, pure honesty of how my brain thinks, and that is as cutthroat as I am. Like, there's no grey area for me. I'm a black and white person. I don't really, I understand there's grey in circumstances. I understand you need an element of grey in life, but I'm very much a black and white person. If you're not fucking doing something, say, for instance, in my role, I'm a health and safety advisor, and I go up to someone and say they're not doing it, and they look at me and go, yeah, no, I'm not doing it, mate. I'm like, well, look, you dickhead. You're doing it because of X, Y, and Z, regulation. That's my life, and I was very much like that in my previous roles. In every role I've been in, there's a black and white area, and if you can't achieve what you're supposed to be achieving, there's no, oh, maybe, oh, I've been a bit stressed. No, you're here to do a fucking job, mate. Do your job or fuck off. And that's the way I've always been, or certainly been in my managerial status. Well, knowing and accepting that I've been a manager through the whole time I started my managerial process, my transition from, you know, shop floor worker to working myself up way up the managerial level and channels. For me personally, I've done that through the development of depression, PTSD, and the middle of my managerial career was when I was at my lowest in my life. So I've thrived I've grown as a manager in a pressurized environment with a pressurized brain. So I've functioned at the highest point of stress that I can put on my body. So now I don't feel that I'm performing if I'm not at that stress level. So if I'm sat there looking at a screen and people are going, oh, just take your fucking time, mate. I physically can't do that. I want the stress. I'm emailing people today because I haven't had anything to do much today. And I was emailing people going, where the fuck's the funding for this? Where can I, what's the next course I can do? I'm jumping onto things because that is my brain. I've functioned like that all the time. So it's interesting how, even though Billy sort of knows me, you know, to a degree, he's known me, he knows I'm an honest person. He's known me through the most honest period of my life. So if anything, he's clearly seen I'm raw and open. This is who I am. But even he got shocked and went, I think his exact words were, dude, it's okay to feel like that, you know, my throat is going, isn't it? Well, I'm very husky. It's okay to feel like that with a colleague, but to feel that for your best friend. And you know, this is going to sound, you know, this is going to sound difficult for some people to hear, but mental health doesn't have a boundary of who you are. Unfortunately, that is why I've lost a lot of friends. That is why I've lost a lot of relationships, because it doesn't matter who you are. I have no limitations to how, if I'm disgruntled with you, or you're a gateway to my disgruntlement, I will fucking tell you. That is the brutal honesty of it. That's why I have to be honest now. And that's why I know for a fact that I didn't hurt Kieran's feelings. Although I wasn't on the same wavelength as him in excitement, because, and that's the only bit, I will say, that's the only bit out of all of it that hurt me when I analysed it, was because I wasn't as excited as he was. And I should have been. And that's where, you know, that's where this morning, I jumped on board this morning and said to my dad, can I come up to work today? And I knew that I was going to go up that way anyway, but I messaged him, he wasn't going to be in, I was just going to go up anyway because he wasn't going to be in. And he said, no. I said, Dad, I need you to come up to work just so I can talk to you. And we just sat there, you know, for the whole day, even to the point where I think for like 2 hours we didn't really talk, but it was just nice to have his company. Excuse me. So, I knew I needed company. I knew I needed to talk to him. And I spoke to him about it. And he actually had a go at me as well. He said the same. You shouldn't have done that. And I'm like, fucking hell, Dad. You must know that I don't have a boundary. I don't. It's my instant reaction. And everybody, I've spoke to you so many times on podcasts that my instant reaction is anger, because I'm fueled by adrenaline. So it doesn't matter who the post gate is. You know, who the door is. I'm kicking the fucking door in. And at the time, because Kieran was talking to me, and genuinely, he was excited. I could hear it in his voice now. And I'm so happy for him. Because he's been given an opportunity that I never had. And I'm going to help him to succeed on the back of that. But I have to acknowledge, and this is where I keep talking to people, that I'm a very, very, very kind person. I really am. I'm trying at the moment. I'm devastated. There was a bee that was exhausted today on the floor. And I picked him up. My dad was like, oh, just leave him, be okay. I was like, no, fuck that. I'm going to try and save him. And I've got a history of trying to save bees, single bees. So we had quite a few in the paint shop, and I used to go up, feed them honey, which I found out was really dangerous, because you shouldn't feed them honey from a different hive. or something like that. You've got to feed them hive from the local area. Excuse me when I take a little sip of my drink, because I'm sounding fucking huskier and huskier. I sound like Pat fucking Butcher. Oh, God, Dean. All right, Dean. anyway, no, that's... no. So this is my voice for the night, anyway. So listen on. I'll sound husky and horny. I've lost my 24. Yeah, so I saved a couple of bees, and... I got a little bit of a history of it. So I discovered that if you give a bee honey from the not local area, which it never was, because I used to bring it from Wiltshire to Hampshire, so I fucking screwed that over. Probably killed the bee. But he always flew away. So I done my bit, as far as I'm concerned. If he fucking falls flat on the flight, you know, his face, you know, 10 yards down the road, that's the same warranty I give my car. It's 10-yard warranty. That's it. I'll spray your car. You got a fucking 10-yard warranty. After that, mate, it's fucking your problem. You know what I mean? So... But I tried to save this bee today because I'm really kind. And I'm even worried about it now. I was like, going to bring it in. I was like, fucking hell, I want to bring it home. I just want to fucking get this bee. You could see it was exhausted. It was like, you know, fucking breathing really heavy. And I was like, and I love it when you put your finger near them and the bastards fucking give you a high five. It's fucking amazing. But a real thing for bees. My dad was like, you're so caring. And I was like, but it's a shock, isn't it? That I am a caring manager. I'm a caring person. I'm a caring husband. I'm a caring father. I'm a caring friend. I love, like, that. If you're in my life, and I genuinely mean this. If you're in my life and I'm talking to you and I'm engaging with you, I actually love you. And it's not, we're not talking homosexual love, fucking hell. We're not talking about, I genuinely love you, as in, you know, we all have different levels of love. You have, you know, you have love for your wife or your partner, whatever, but... The reason that's exacerbated because you have lust for them as well. You have to. That's not what we do with friends, but you still love. You know, I still would be at the people I engage with, all of them. I've engaged with them enough to be invested in their life that I genuinely would be upset if I lost them. And that is where, you know, there's some people that I've lost, and dare I say, you know, I've been sort of, oh, fucking hell. But again, they're second thoughts to me in the sense I don't really interact with them. And I don't mean that in a negative way, because it's not like that at all. But I'm not going to continue to mourn or worry or reminisce because I didn't have an investment with them. So the people I invest with daily are the people that I genuinely love and care for and would be genuinely upset if I lost them. So that is the level of friendship I have and care I have for the people around me. Like, and I've been hurt because of how much I do care. But at the same time, it doesn't matter who you are. If something affects me, and it affects me in such a way, I do not have a filter. I don't have that barrier. So if you've known me long enough, as long enough as Kieran has, he would know. I mean, Christ, Kieran's been there for a lot of things. I can give you a fucking prime example, okay? So I'm going to tell you a story, and I'm going to tell you from my point of view, okay? And I'm going to tell you from his point of view as well, from what I know because I analysed it. But this is how much of a fucking arsehole I was, and this is how much of a friend Kieran is to me. So we were working with each other, and we were on Lates, I think, one night, which wasn't late, but this is how deep in my depression and PTSD I was, that and I didn't recognise Kieran. So now, think of me whatever you will. I, after this story, I cannot change it. It was not meant in malice, but I want you to physically understand how much PTSD or depression can fucking ruin you. And this is a prime example. I've got story after story on how you need to deal with it, because this is the level it can get to. Now, I remember walking in to talk to Kieran, and he was masking up this. I don't exactly know what it was. If I can't fully recall what it was, but it was an intricate. I think it was an intricate mod for the Chinook, and it was a bit of a bastard to mask up. And we had another person there, which was the Tech 3, who was slow as fuck. I'm not gonna lie to you. Absolute fucking buffoon. But he was there, so you know. I knew that Kieran could mask. You know, to Kieran's two, maybe three. This guy would do like half of one. So, you know, I kind of knew that. And there was fucking loads to do. There was loads of this masking job. And it was over and over, so it was pretty repetitive. Kieran will probably tell me the exact product tomorrow because I can't really remember. But again, it was a different stage to me then. Different situation. I didn't remember the finer details, but I do remember the impact. And this is how intense. I remember them all. I remember every single one. I've got a memory that you wouldn't fucking believe. If you scorn me, you hurt me, I will never, ever, ever forget. I can't. I've tried. I physically have tried. I cannot. And if I hurt somebody, I remember every single occasion because it's scarred into my brain. And anyway, so he was masking something and I went, oh, how many are you doing, you know, an hour? And he went, oh, doing, I think he was working out. I think he was doing something like five an hour or something. No, it might have been three an hour. That was it, three an hour. And I was like, right, well, break it down. And I broke that down and I said, it's X amount of minutes. I was like, so you should be able to do one in X amount of minutes then. And we started racing we didn't do it purposely, but we did. I was masking one up because I didn't know how to mask him up, but I'm very confident in masking. I can just look at something. I've been doing it long enough. Now, we were masking this thing up, and I was looking at the time, so I knew it was a competition. I was all in competition. I was fucking done. I was ready to go. And anyway, we got to the end of this masking job, and I think we'd done it in something like 7 minutes. And he was doing them in, I don't know, 15, 18 minutes per one. Something silly like that. And he turned around to me, and I don't know, to this day, I genuinely don't, but I think he beat me masking it up. Now, he'll say he will. The competitive side of me say he didn't. However, I accepted that. But he said to me, I fucking beat you. And then he took it as a little bit of a, like, he's beating me in something and he knows how competitive I am. So he deservedly relished it. So, and obviously I took a bit of offense to that because I am a super competitive person in anything I fucking do. I cannot fail. So, but I had to accept it because I wasn't going to argue the point. And then I did click and think, well, he is my best friend. But at the moment I'm talking to him like a colleague. So then I switched then and I put my managerial head on with the PTSD. And I turned around to him and said, oh, okay, mate, no, fine, that's fine, you won. I said, but you've done that in fucking 7 minutes, okay? Why the fucking hell have you taken fucking this long to do this? And he was like, well, because I can't maintain that speed. I went, you've just proved to me you can maintain that fucking speed. So how many are fucking left? And I counted them up. And, excuse me, we'll have a little drink. Little, leave you on a cliffer. Got such a sore throat. I said, how many's got left? So I calculated it. And I was like, right, that's going to take you fucking 2 hours then. I said, so we'll stay here for fucking 2 hours and you'll get every single one of them fucking done at that fucking pace. And we will not leave until they're done. So it's on your fucking hands. Now, I saw the Tech 3. The Tech 3 thought, oh my fucking God, mate, that's ridiculous. And I was in the zone where work was my life, so I didn't really fucking care. And I was like, I'm going to be a dick. So, you know, Kieran went from the competitive win to, oh fuck, to now we just had an argument. And I didn't feel any emotion, so I walked away from the situation. And I walked upstairs and I had no fucking remorse whatsoever. Like, absolutely none. Completely just ripped my best friend apart, who's working with me, and treated him like a fucking stupid colleague, basically, is what I did. Now, the fact that I remember that, and I will remember that for the rest of my life, as a fucking scar in my brain, I carry that with me because, you know, I work tirelessly to do everything I can to undo the wrongs. So I will constantly look after him, and I get over these barriers. Trust me, I didn't get over that barrier. I just fucking carried on. And to be honest, I think I came back in about 9 o'clock, and there was about 3 or 4 left, and I'd calmed down by then. So I said to him, fine, you fucking do them in the morning. But I still spoke to him like that. Fine, fucking do them in the morning. And then we went off and we departed our ways, and I went home and he went home, and we never discussed it. Excuse me. Oh my God, my throat's killing me. And we never really discussed it. And yeah, this is my first showing, but I know that moment so vividly. Like, I know that it was in the little hut in the main spray bay. You know, he was inside. He had the fucking heater on, the bay lights and everything off, because they were just doing the masking up in the office. And I switched off the... I remember getting out, walking out there, going and switching the compressor off for the silence, because I know I'd wound myself up so much. And never fucking... By the way, I never even helped them. I just fucking left it. And, So when you get shocked over how that little conversation for 10 seconds was, the reality of it is, that's pretty much fuck all, really, considering what I've done and how I've been for years. And to me, that's why our friendship stands the test of time. There's nothing that we haven't, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm the only one that's ever done anything. We've both done things in our friendships, and we've always come out of those bad times, and we've always supported each other. So if anything, that's why, you know, I genuinely love the guy. I think he's an absolute fucking legend. I would never wish anything bad on him. You know, this is why I was rushing around, you know, writing his CV for him, because I wanted to get him out of Serco and into a job. So, you know, I wanted him to get into the civil service so he can work alongside me, and actually I want to look after him again and nurture him through even further, but hopefully in something that I'm interested in, because I know he'll love it with me. So, you know, you can't judge a character by you know, a 10-second clip, or, you know, that's where it becomes difficult. And that's what's given me the inspiration to jump on here and just go, if you think that's bad, that's fuck all compared to what I've done. You know, right down to when I show you there's no barriers. You know, I've I've had an argument with my parents, and I've called them both, you know, the C word on a phone, and didn't talk to them for 6 months, you know. And then in that same spout of talking to people, I spoke to my sister and, you know, had a massive argument with her about my mental health and her mental health, and ended up calling her the C word, and we didn't speak for 2 years, and we've only spoke 3 times in the last 4 years. That's how we left it off. So, you know, your boundaries there is no boundary, limitless. There's no boundary with mental health. It doesn't matter who you are or what you are. That's why I challenge myself all the time. I mean, Christ, I walked in one day and I was out shopping in Southampton with my family, and for absolutely no reason, we had a good day. I'm just gonna have another sip, gents, while I do this. I apologize. This, I'm trying to roll with it, but I'm conscious I keep losing, going a bit croaky. I'll try and talk through the bottom of my mouth rather than, if I talk through that way, hopefully that'll offer a little bit of resistance in another area. Yeah, so where was I? Yeah, and we went to Southampton for the day, me, my wife and my children, and you know, I spent the day, and now this is kind of where I discovered that I had a problem with noise. And obviously we went to the main city centre, you know, into the shopping mall, and, you know, did a bit of day shopping. But obviously my kids were quite needy because, you know, they were young. You know, they were pretty much babies and, you know, toddlers. So I had all the pressures of that. I had all the pressures of, you know, not really having a lot of money at the time, but wanting to get things. And yeah, I came home highly stressed. And this was before, actually, I think I'd been fully diagnosed. In fact, it would have been, yeah, so it was at the start. and yeah, I remember talking to her. I remember we come home, she drove, and I was complete and utter arsehole. I remember walking through the door, and the kids were upstairs, and there was so much noise, and I was so fucking angry. It's unbelievable. And I remember walking in, and I remember saying to her, "You're an amazing mother, but you're a fucking shit wife." And now, that's cutting, and it cuts me now to say it, because I said that. And I remember walking outside, I remember walking to my back garden, and I just stood there while I calmed down, and I walked back in, and she was crying, and I went, "What are you crying for?" Because I'd almost blacked out. I just was so mad, so frustrated, such a brain fog, that I would splurt things out, and, you know, that would be the repercussions. And because I had no emotion, and I don't have any emotion, I don't get upset. So to see her cry, I was like, "What are you doing? Fucking pull yourself together. Why are you fucking crying?" As if it had, like, not happened. So it sounds shocking, but that's the reality of mental health. That is true mental health. That is what I've endured. I've got an open book of things that I've done, said, things that have happened. But it's not about that. It's not about dragging up the past. I've accepted the past. There's two stories I've given you there to fully express that it doesn't matter who you are or what you are. When you have PTSD, you are challenging everything all the time. If something affects you, and that did, when he told me, I didn't look at it as Kieran. I couldn't even tell you what he said after he told me that that's what they did. There was a blank period because I was just instantly angry. This is what happens with PTSD. And it was a relapse for me because of how much that company made me feel and how shit they made me feel and how worthless I felt when I left there and how to the point where I had absolutely zero confidence in my new job, and I still get worried that I'm not achieving all the time. I still sit here now and worry that I'm not achieving. My boss has basically taken a piss out of me because I'm enthusiastic, but I'm enthusiastic because I want to make sure I'm not failing, because no one ever told me if I was failing or not. I just carried on and just did what I could to do what I could to make it right. If it was above and beyond, brilliant. You know, if it wasn't, I was always trying to please people, always trying to please people and make sure that they felt okay. But I never really thought about the people that really cared. So I've given you two stories there that and you know, they're factual. That is who I've spoke to more than two stories. I've spoke to the people that I deeply love, and completely and utterly berated them, and made them feel shit, and I felt no remorse. Even now, I don't have an emotion about it. I'm upset because I've done it, but I've come to terms with the fact that I can't change it. And it wasn't me. That wasn't the person I am. The people that see me as I am now, yeah, that is who I've always been. I've always been caring. I've always been fun. I've always been adventurous. You know, when everyone was, you know, when we were younger and we were fucking around, I was always interested in girls. I was always snakeboarding everywhere. Snake, not skate. Google it, it's an amazing tool. I've still got one in the attic, actually. I bought one a few years ago when I come back from Afghanistan as a little treat. It's an absolutely amazing piece of kit, and I can still ride it now. So search up snake board. I bought mine from Cunning Stunts. Is it? Yes, Cunning Stunts. And you try to say it fast and you always say it the other way around. That's the whole purpose of it. It was in Salisbury years ago. So I've always been that person. I've always been fun. I've always been, you know, outgoing. I've always had a bit of confidence, and I've always been dipping in and out of women when I was younger, you know. But it was always fun. It was always friendly. And the depression made me a person I'm not. But the people that have stuck through me through that, and the ones that are sat beside me right now that have been there 10 years ago, the ones that I'll never forget. But the people that are just learning about me now and just speaking about it, and that's why it was a bit of a shock for Billy there, was this is the reality of mental health, my friend. This is the reality of it. It doesn't matter who you are. If I wanted to walk in and you'd upset me, I will fucking absolutely, completely and utterly destroy you through words. I will fucking delete you. I will block you, and I will never forget. I'll never come back. That's the way I am. That is why I'm nurturing the right people around me, because that adds stress to my life, naturally. And that's why I'm trying to change. But you're still going to get a feel from me. You're still going to get that dipping in, because it's really hard to suppress it, even taking tablets. That's why I manage my day all the fucking time. People are like, what are you doing? My day is calculated. You look at my calendar, it's all structured in the right colours. I have an agenda all the time. This is why I get stressed when I don't have a list of things I'm doing. So, it's horrible. It's all I can describe it as. It's horrible. But there's nothing I can do about it. There isn't. It's PTSD. It makes me react. It doesn't matter who's telling me the story. If Kieran hadn't told me the story, and someone else had told me the story, say for instance, Kieran didn't tell me the story, but he told you, Billy, or Nelly, whatever. He might have told Nelly. And then Nelly came up to me and go, oh, did you fucking hear about Kieran? And then told me the story. I'd go fucking ballistic at him. I'd be like, he'd be sat on the phone getting a barrage. And then when I speak to Kieran, I'd be like, and I'd do the same. I'd speak to Kieran and go, fuck are you doing, you dickhead, until it's off my chest. But this time I gripped it in 10 seconds, apologised, gave him full support, and then I've spent a day and a half apologising and sending text messages because, you know, I acknowledged I was a dick, but I can't help that. It's nothing I've done in my past. I can't change it. I can't change those stories. I can't change the words that I've said because those words have been spoken. And as anyone knows, words are mightier than the sword for me. I don't need weapons. My weapon is my voice. And that's unfortunately why it's so deadly with me. Because with a weapon, you know it's there. You can see it. It's always there, isn't it? You know, if someone's coming at you with a baseball bat, you know where it's going to be, and you're going to look for where it fucking swings. If I come to you, there'll be nothing. You'll just get, it'll be like that. It'll literally be, hi. Boom, click, fucking have it. And that's why I learn. That's why I've got coping mechanisms. That's why I don't put myself in stressful situations anymore. I'm a manager on my way up, so I have to manage this. But, well, like I said, it's the click of a finger. And I'm fucking dealing that power, you know. But I'm so articulate, and I don't mean it in a fucking big-headed way, that I can fucking baffle you with words, and I can absolutely fucking berate you. And I don't get remorse from it. And even my therapist, when I sat there with my therapist, and she said, what do you get out of it? I said, I don't know. I said, I think that when I see that person crumbling in front of me, I get adrenaline from it, and I feed off the adrenaline. And that's how bad I was. That is how horrendous I was. That's why I don't go there. That's why I don't get angry. That's why when people attack me, and I've had it in previous jobs, I've had it in, you know, I've had fucking all sorts of people, managers fucking berate me and made me feel absolute shit. And I look at them and go, you don't know who I fucking am. I don't want to be that person anymore. Let me be the person I am, but you're treating me like a fucking child. And the only way that I've ever managed to scale the heights I've done is because I've just gone, like, fuck you. Leave me alone. Let me do my shit. And then people look at me and I just go, fucking, you don't want this, mate. You're not the guy. And that's where I am. I'm also very meticulous, very OCD. So I do everything by the book. I have to. Because then I can stand there with my head held high, and it's when they come at me and they look at me and they go, fucking, yeah, but you've done, they can't, because I'm doing everything that you've asked me to do, and I do it to a letter. I do everything. Everything's archived, everything's fucking in files, everything's exactly where it should be, everything's in files on OneDrive. I do everything properly, everything's recorded. Because I have to. Because then when I sit there and I go, you're a fucking idiot, and they go, well, you fucking prove this to me, and I go, boom. Prove it, boom. Boom. Now get your fucking self in your box. So I try to learn all the time. Because I try to just give myself that information. It's a downside to PTSD. And that's why I constantly try to be nice. But at the same time, you have to acknowledge when you're not being nice. And that's why yesterday and previous times when I've spoke about the depths of where I've been and fields and stuff like that, and I talk about these situations, I'm talking about it from my perspective that it's out of it, you sometimes can't control it. And that's why I have to be open and honest to people. And that's why everyone knows when I see you, if you really get to know me, I'll be like, dude, I've got fucking PTSD. Because then it's something to back up why the fuck I'm doing what I'm doing. It, like I say, it doesn't matter who you are. I will fucking berate you if you do something that upsets me. And that's why I don't get in those situations. You know, Kieran didn't know. He was excited. He was, and genuinely so. He should be so. He's been given a great opportunity. He needs to grab the ball by the horns and fucking go for it, like I said yesterday. Last podcast. But at the same time, you know, I can say that now because I'm comfortable in that situation, and he's bettering himself and he's moving forward, more money, everything. It's really, really good news. And that's why how I feel now. And I will help him as much as I can. Any managerial questions, he'll fire my way. But it's interesting, isn't it? How, you know, and I spoke to Kieran, he has left me a message, actually. I'm jumping on his podcast. So I haven't read it, but I just wanted his feedback. I just wanted, did I come across as being a bit of an arsehole? So I just wanted to know how he felt. Hold on. And you know, it was interesting how somebody still knows I'm a nice person, but I've possibly come across so nice that it's hard to believe that I would do that, which is actually a positive. And you know, I would take a positive out of that because, you know, if I was like that all the time, they would just, and you were expected to be like that, then yeah, you know, then I haven't changed, have I? Because that's how I always was. And people used to say to me all the time, oh, fucking hell, don't go to James. I mean, if you've seen some emails that I used to send fucking NJOPS and all that, they were so on fucking point, but with so much fucking spirit behind it, but no one fucked with me. But it's not collaborative working because people just went, just don't ask him, mate. He's not going to say fucking yet. And I was by the book. I've always been by the book, always. Because I know I'm the type of guy that's going to get shafted. I've always, whenever I've slipped outside the book and I've fucking had a bit of a good time, I've always been the punished person. Always. And that's just because of my personality. I'm fucking outrageous, you know. I love it. But it's interesting. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, that even now, somebody who knows me can be shocked by something. That's why I need to explain. That's why I need to jump on, because there was nothing in it, absolutely nothing in it at all. It wasn't meant like that, and I'm super happy. And I will have a pint with my best friend to celebrate his advancement and help him out as much as I can, because it's a great opportunity. And you know, all these people filtering out are actually giving people opportunities that, you know, other people didn't do. The fucking dinosaurs that stayed in the seats in front of me for years, and that's all it is. But he's more than capable of doing it. It's just, yeah, get yourself out of the comfort zone and just push yourself until that becomes the next comfort zone. So yeah, interesting. I'm not gonna talk too long because my throat is killing me, and I've coughed and spluttered and everything. But I wanted to just jump on and just show you that, you know, that's the reality of PTSD. It doesn't matter who you are, and that's why you have to give respect. And this is why we have to be open. We have to tell people about our conditions, because even though Billy knows about my condition, knows about PTSD, and knows I've had manic depression and anxiety, and I've spoke about it, he still took a shock factor and went, do that to a colleague, but not your best friend. And it's interesting for me to explain. That's why I jumped on and went, there you go. That's literally there, mate. That is what PTSD does. There is no, you're not a person to me. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. You were just an obstacle when I get into that brain mode. That's why I don't go in that brain mode. That's why I am very conscious about who I hang around with, and very conscious about the activities that I, you know, I undertake. I'm very conscious about the drink that I drink. I'm very conscious about everything I do in my life. You know, I'm conscious about eating, what foods I eat and how it makes me feel now. So I've eaten bread for a couple of days and I feel like shit, absolute shit. But I've been wanting sweets and stuff to keep my energy up for the day. So I'm a lot more educated with my own, and in tune with my own body. Excuse me. I'm in tune with my own body. So, but it's interesting when it comes out and the PTSD comes out, and we've all heard you sound like shit. But when this situation like that comes on, that's and you really got the light version of it. You know, what was going on in my head was fucking screaming. The podcast explained what was going on in my head, and to give you a context, all those other little stories I spoke about tonight, you know, they were said with force. Because that is what it is. You say it with anger, gusto, you know. So, yeah, a little tiny insight to PTSD. You can be the nicest person on the world, but Jacqueline Hyde, I used to get called, you know, and people used to go, "Have you got fucking bipolar?" for years, because I'm like that. I'm trying to control myself all the time. Not even trying, I'm succeeding in controlling myself. But every now and then a scenario. But when you look at the scenario that created that, it was a very, very, very dark time of my life. So to get dragged back in, I don't think anyone can really comprehend that as soon as you mention that place and what they're doing, the anger and the spark of emotion and the spark of memories that it drags up. And even talking to you now, my brain is in fucking overload. I'm thinking about people. I'm thinking about scenarios that they've done, people that have screwed me over there. Honestly, you got to think, there's 13 years and the last 9 are fucking horrendous, you know. And I should have had amazing times. I was working with my best fucking friend. But you actually realise when you're left there that your friend is the only person there that was ever really nice and was ever with you, because all the others have just fucked me off. They're all, and then when I've reflected back on them, they're all complete arseholes. And I would never socialise with them ever. And that's why it's conscious about who you, so that's why we have to be honest. We have to be open. We have to talk. But I needed to come on really and explain, because even the way that I was spoke to, mate, was even by, you know, by Billy, and he sort of put it across like, nah, you can't do that, mate. you can't do that, as almost as if I've got control of it. And that's where I was like, no, mate, I don't think you quite understand. No harm, but you really don't understand. It doesn't matter who you are. If you upset me, I will fucking tell you you've upset me. And that's why I don't go to the point and I don't hang around with people that upset me. Because if you upset me, I will fucking make you feel shit, and I will feel like shit afterwards. Christ alive, I will. But I'll never show it. Never show you to my face. And I don't want to be in that situation. So it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting me jumping on here again. It's excited me because it's like, you know, there you go. You know, what you think is I've got control of, I don't have control of. And, you know, let's just hope that people now that, you know, they don't experience it. Kieran's very, very, very interested in investing my life like I am with his. So he's been there through worse, like I said, a lot worse times than that. That was a 10-second conversation. But at the same time, he's been there for every single high, every good time I've had, he's been there. So he knows the good side of me, and he's known me 28 years, so he's known me well before, you know, he's known me, 28, so he's known me 19 years without any of this, grown up, or well, not, yeah, a couple of years after actually, so, you know, 19 years of not having this, and he's seen how I've progressed massively, you know, since I've been doing podcasts and starting this and talking to you and investing in the right people. He's seen the change in me. I would never have gone out at the weekend to Cardiff. I've chinned it off for years. You know, like I said, the last time I socialised with this guy was 10 years ago. I've never socialised with him after the PTSD, ever. Never socialised with him. This is the first time that me and Tag got together and we all had a good time. And he's there, he's been there. Again, he was there for that high. He was there for, and that's what's really important. And he recognises when I'm low, when I'm shit. I'm in a fucking awful place at the moment. Really am in an awful place. Emotionally, physically, mentally, I'm in a fucking horrible place. But I'm just braving it off and batting it off. My body's falling to bits. It's not a hangover at all. It's just, you know, it was probably originally. And it's a bit of cold now, but it's also a mixture of low emotions. Anyway, I'm going to cut it off there because I need to get a cup of tea before I go to bed. Thank you for listening. And, you know, I hope that's been insightful into the brain of James Littlejohn. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. So, yeah, take care and keep smiling.